This is The Hardline, the greatest show on earth. The Hardline with TJ Moe, Cam Jansen, John Hadley, Bob Ramsey, and who the hell else knows?
Hey, welcome to The Hardline, 590 The Fan, Kevin Essen, 590TheFan.com. TJ Moe. Alongside the voice of the Slew Billikens, Bob Ramsey. And hey, man, welcome, 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 everyone. Glad to have you in today. A lot of fun. Actually, a lot of different topics today. We are going to talk to the play-by-play man of the radio broadcast of your St. Louis Blues. We are nailing down a time. We are in contact with him at the moment. It will either be right off the top here shortly, or we'll get him at 1:30. We're going to talk to Raphael from mybookie.ag at 2:05 per usual on Thursday. We missed him last week due to Thanksgiving, but he will be back in the fold today. And we just got a lot of little stuff going on.
Little
today.
Stuff.
So,
but all kind of fun.
I don't know if you noticed the difference today. I would consider him our third, because Hadley's at best a fourth on this show. So our third abandoned us again. And this is why David Solomon is such a necessity around here, because he fills in every hole.
He can do it all.
And you got guys like Matt Rocchio who create holes all the time. Where the heck is Rock? Who's going to do the text line today?
Yeah.
You're on the text line.
I got the text line, 855-282-8255.
Thank you. And we are offering immunity, although Rock is in charge of the immunity. So if you do want immunity from whoever blocked you on the text line, you have to go to my Twitter at TJMo28 and message me, and we will go from there as well. I'm also, just for all you guys, I was in my garage. I just moved, and so I have, I don't know, about 10,000 old gloves that I used in games. So as I'm building up my YouTube, if you would like I am doing a giveaway. If you guys want some signed game-worn gloves, go subscribe to my YouTube.
How about that?
I'll send them out to you.
That's pretty cool.
There's a ton. There's bags of them. My wife's very...
As we are wont to do, we go off track and get off on tangents.
We do.
When did, as a receiver, when did you start wearing gloves?
Oh, man.
Or did you always?
Yeah, always. So, Carl Geddes was a... I played with him in high school. He played at Missouri as well. He was a corner up there, but
yeah,
he was running back for us. There was a certain kind of... I never wore gloves growing up because... I played quarterback.
Okay.
However,
comma,
got into high school, and he's like, I got two pairs of gloves I'm switching off. You want to wear the other ones? He wore, like, he had two. He was all about matching his clothes and stuff. So when we wore white, he wore white. When we wore black, he wore black. Okay. So he would always give me the other ones to wear, and I started wearing them because I played receiver for 1 year in high school as a sophomore. And so after that, I wore gloves, and I wore them through college. This is why I have issues with people who can't catch. You don't even have to close your hand. Just get your hand somewhere close.
It sticks.
Yeah, I mean, it's not quite that. I'm making fun of people, but really, it's those gloves are high-level stuff.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
Okay, I'm curious.
Yes, and I have a ton of them. So if you want to subscribe to my YouTube, let me know you did that. I will choose a winner and send you some signed gloves. I wish I could get them signed by somebody you actually cared about, but alas, I cannot do that. So I will sign them myself. Okay, we do have a myriad of things. There is one thing on this show that we do and do not do, and it is good to have a pro like Bob Ramsey next to me because he's up to date with just about everything.
I know nothing.
We have we don't have a producer on this show. In fact, our board op doesn't show up half the time. So it's just us, and Hadley's in and out and in and out, whatever. So what we do is we all come together and have different topics. But you got a guy like Rammer who knows and is up to date on virtually everything. So
I feel like this is a setup.
It's not a setup at all. I was going to give the rundown of all the different little stories that you've already read about. You've been on the show now for 3 weeks or so, and I am yet to bring up something that you don't even watch the NFL, and you still know what's going on, right? It's like you're up to date on virtually everything. So
because it's everywhere, it's hard not to be aware.
Yeah. And you have an opinion, and that really, really matters. So, as we pointed out here, we have the mybookie.ag at 2:05.
Probably Chris Kerber is ready for us, by the way, whenever we want to do it. So if we want to call and talk to Kerbs now, we can. If we want to wait and do it 1:30 and tell a couple stories, we can. Whatever works for you guys.
Rammer, your call, buddy.
I say let's go for it.
Get him on the phone. Let's
do
it. Chris Kerber of yours.
Anything to make the show better.
Blues. Oh, yeah. Kerbs makes the show better. He'd be better if he came in and took my spot. I guarantee you that show would be better. And a lot of people
just came in and
that.
Brought us some food. That would be good.
There's food out there. Did you see that?
Yeah, it's cold.
Yeah. Oh, come on. You have microwaves.
It's not the same.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. I am. I mean,
microwave's a necessity. I got to eat. I got to have some temperature here. Okay, mm-hmm. I'll use it. But, and they're great for popcorn. Okay? Great for popcorn. I don't even call it the microwave. I call it the popcorn maker.
I'm down with that.
Yeah.
I am so down. Now, I did this the other day. When I need theater popcorn, I don't have to go necessarily go watch a movie. I just go get the popcorn and walk back out. My grandpa taught me that a long time ago. You walk in, you say, I just know some popcorn. You go out and order the popcorn, come right back out, and go home. So I did
there
that the
go.
Other day.
Did you really?
I did. Joining us now is the St. Louis Blues radio play-by-play man and our friend Chris Kerber. Kerbs, how are you, sir?
TJ Rammer, I'm doing good.
How are you? Buddy.
How is everything? How is the broadcast? I have been through seasons like this, being close to programs and things. How are you guys in the booth holding up with what has been a really tumultuous start to the year?
Well, I think that kind of that's the key. We're doing just fine. It's been a tumultuous start, but I don't think the middle or the ending chapters of this season have been written yet. And unfortunately, I think in today's sports world, the moment of a guy turns pro, you've got to determine whether or not he's a Hall of Famer. And, and I still think that this team has the talent and the ability to really turn this season around. Now, with every passing game, it gets a little more daunting, but I think they have the talent and the ability to do it. So I think we let that guide us. And I've learned over the years, and frankly learned it from my dad too, in watching the Cardinals in the 80s when they went from first place to out of it to first place to out of it. That you gotta enjoy the ride of a season, and I've adopted that as a philosophy as a broadcaster.
You know, Kerbs, a lot of folks in our business, I hear, and I get it, fans too. Oh, I'm sick of hearing the players say we got outworked. What they're not listening though is that is always the default answer to the media. The thing is, you're losing more, so you hear it more. It's all if you win, well, we went out and worked hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's always the default analysis. So I think sometimes we overreact to some of those things. Thoughts?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I think, sometimes people forget to put themselves in the place of these athletes. And it's sort of like, the criticisms I get right now are I'm a homer because I'm I don't say that the guy is the worst player on the planet and, and cracking a whole bunch of mama jokes on him, and challenging his heritage. It's stupid. These guys have to stand in front of the media every day. And when things spiral, sometimes you really just don't have an answer for it. And they start to spiral. And one of the default answers, you're right, is, well, we kind of got outworked. Why do they say that? Well, because it's an easy one. Well, we lost that battle. We lost this battle. And, yes, it is frustrating to hear. I totally understand as a fan because when players answer with that, well, you're like, well, that's inexcusable because that's the one thing you can control.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's overused. I think coaches should tell players, let's come up with something else. Frankly, I think PR teams and coaches should help their players with better answers.
Yes.
And, to be honest with you. But, that said, as often as they keep using it, I can totally understand why the fans would think the way they think because they're indicting themselves on something that is completely in their control.
One thing that I've heard Alex Pietrangelo use as well, I think I'm with the fans on this, but I'm also with you guys as far as understanding what's going on. He says, we just didn't come out ready to play. And you and I kind of got into this last time we talked. It doesn't so much mean that they're rolling out of bed and, hey, we just weren't ready and we kicked it in the second period. It's kind of more of a default. Obviously, by what happened, they were more ready to play than we were, and that's why things cranked out the way they are. I think what fans don't understand, Kerbs, is that would you rather have that or would you rather have a guy calling his teammates out one by one on individual plays, which I, as a sports fan, would not prefer because you're just throwing everybody under the bus.
Well, I think fans would rather hear somebody throw someone under the bus, but we know that that's not reality.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's the world that we're living in. I think they'd rather hear that. But remember now, the moment that they do that, right, the first topic that's going to hit, like when you can turn on any of the sports talk shows, you can turn on any of the TV shows, and there's going to be somebody saying, should this player have done this, right?
Yep.
So you want it, but the moment they do it, Now, you know, that's all the rage is talking about whether or not he should have done it. And so, look, I'll relate it directly to this team and what's going on right now, guys. This team has lost its identity, okay? Over the last couple of years, when you built up an identity, you built up a system, you built up a philosophy, you did it with a core group of guys, you know, from T.J. Oshie and David Backus and Berglund Perron, Petrangelo, those guys all coming in. Bo Meester, his first contract with the hockey team as well. You change coaches to Ken Hitchcock. Now you know exactly the style you're going to play. All right. Well, you made a change to build more of a Ken Hitchcock team. And by doing that, you traded away T.J. Oshie, right? A competitive son of a gun, a guy that wants to win, a guy that's terrific in the community, but wanted to make a point. So you traded away T.J. Oshie to bring in Troy Brouwer. Now, it worked that year because you went to the conference final. You were two wins away or three wins away from a Stanley Cup final. You know, but the problem is going into that year, you had Brouwer and David Backus that were unrestricted free agents, and you weren't able to re-sign either one of the guys. You didn't want to re-sign Backus to the term that Boston signed him, right? And in the end, while Brouwer wanted to stay, Calgary gave him an extra year. Of course, here it is 2 years later, and Brouwer was bought out by Calgary, right? And Backus is still going to Boston. So that begins this transformation. You try to go to a speedier team. In the process, it's not a Ken Hitchcock style. So the coaching effectiveness of Ken Hitchcock goes by the wayside. You turn it over now to Mike Yeo, right? Mike Yeo is trying to coach through that transition, and it was exactly that for 2 years. He got the spark. He got the change. Now you make the changes from last offseason. You move some more of those guys out. You bring in guys like Ryan O'Reilly who have been terrific. You think you've made a couple moves. What you didn't get was faster. You know, and you're hoping that a guy like Thomas or Kyrou come in and be more impactful than they have been. And, you know, and that's a lot to put on a 19 and a 20-year-old kid on top of that, too. So now, because that doesn't go, but you've got the pressure of having missed the playoffs last season, and you've got the pressure of thinking that this team is better than it is. Now you turn around and you make another coaching change. So you've got an interim coach now. But in the process of all that, when you go from those players I began with to what you've got now, I think this team has lost its identity. And Craig Berube here in four games is at least trying to create an identity of some physicality, some energy, a style here. And we have seen it, I think, more in spurts in the last few games than we saw it on a more regular basis in the first part of the year. So that's encouraging. Unfortunately, you've got the pressure of the season mounting and mounting, which makes it more daunting to try and realize where you are in the standings. You wake up today and you realize, holy smokes, you're tied with the LA Kings for last place in the National Hockey League, and you're better than this. So it snowballs on you, and I can tell you the players don't really have answers for that kind of thing, and yet they have to stand in front of the media and try and figure it out. Fans just sometimes don't like what they hear.
And
how was that?
It was good.
Yeah, great.
We're right there with you.
Right,
what do you think about you changed coaches, you felt like you had to. That's not the debate. But trying to find, you know, when you're trying to seek out that identity, part of it is chemistry on the ice too, and trying to find a consistent lineup, and it seems like Berube's trying to do that. Do you think there's still searching that has to happen, or do you think the way things are now will start clicking?
No, I think there's still searching that has to happen, Rammer. And you bring up a good point here because I think what you have to do right now is you have to realize that this thing is in a little bit of disarray.
Yeah.
Okay, and there was no success reinforcement coming from the beginning of the year. So now you've got to find some kind of center, some foundation that you can start to build a game off of with this group of guys. So the way I look at it is I say, okay, what do we see that's a little bit different here in the last four games? Under Craig Berube, that was not different in the previous, 16 games. Number one, Colton Parayko seems to be getting more ice time. Now, last night, Alex Petrangelo led the team in ice time with 27 minutes. I thought he played a really good game. Haven't had a chance to get that confirmation from the coach, but from the booth, I thought Alex played a really good game. But in the previous 5 of 6, it was actually Colton Parayko that led the team in ice time. So you're seeing more ice time given to Edmondson and Parayko, which I think is important there. You saw a change going back to Edmondson and Pietrangelo last night, Dunn and Parayko. All right. Remember, don't forget, Vince Dunn is still a second-year NHL player. They're still trying to bring this guy along, too, and he's getting key ice time in a top-four role. The other thing that we're seeing, without a shred of doubt, is Craig Berube wants to give these younger guys more of a role. He wants to get Dunn rolling. He is giving good opportunities to Robert Thomas. And then it was not a good last couple games, I think, for Robert Thomas. The puck was coming off of his stick, a couple of turnovers last night, and that's why you saw David Perron, who was having a good game, going on the line with Shen and Fabry. And you know, and so the other thing I saw is I saw a couple of pretty good coaching adjustments, you know, throughout the game last night that I thought, you know, were helpful and that mattered. Now, one glaring thing that came off the page is when they scored their game-winning goal, you ended up with what proved to be probably your weakest defending forward line out on the ice at the same time with your weakest defensive pair. And that could, to me, that winds up being a strategic mistake. Now, whether that was, I haven't had a chance to go back and look at, you know, whether that was a result of icing or whether that was a result of a line change and then a turnover. I don't know the exact reason yet. The team will hit the ice here in about an hour. But so those are the things I look at in terms of the differences from Craig Berube. And then lastly, the one thing he said is we've got to pay attention to detail, the little things, the small things that win, those are non-negotiable. Well, you know, I still don't think we're seeing the cleanest of practices and stuff right now. So Craig Berube has his work cut out for them to get this team to practice better so they play better in the games. I think sometimes we see too much in games the way this team has been practicing, which is not at an overly high pace, isn't necessarily very sharp, and I think that feeds over into some of the games.
Curbs, it's interesting. We've been talking about chemistry all year, and you went back to the TJ Oshie teams, David Backes and those guys. Clearly, they had the chemistry going to the Western Conference Finals. Since that time, and even that year, honestly, you go through a period where, I mean, Hitch changed lines all the time. And so the chemistry was based on the night. But the lines we're seeing now, they're changing, and you have it occasionally. But overall, I don't think too many people would tell you that this team has great chemistry or they've really meshed just yet. And my question is that the job of Doug Armstrong to identify that and sit down with guys and say, this guy's going to work with these guys on this team when he brings them in? Or is it just his job to identify talent and it's up to the coaching in order to get everybody to mesh?
I think there's a shared responsibility there. I think Doug Armstrong will give his thoughts to the coach. But one thing that I've learned from Doug very clearly, his philosophy is it's the coach's job to coach. You know, there was a stretch in there where Doug Armstrong did not want to see, you know, Bullmeester and Pietrangelo. He felt that those two guys should have been broken up, and Ken Hitchcock rode those guys, you know, like a top horse. So, I think that it's a shared thing, but I think it's frankly more upon the coaches. Once you have the team set and once the discussions have happened with the general manager, I think it's more upon the coach to figure out what chemistry is working and what is not.
We are talking to Blues play-by-play man Chris Kerber about the St. Louis Blues' rough start to the season, but with 59 games to go, you really do have a chance. And we've watched the Blues go on runs. Heck, they did it when they fired Ken Hitchcock. If you're sitting there and you're Tom Stillman, what is the next move? We've heard, you know, we've heard potential trades. We virtually every radio show in town is just saying, all right, if you got to trade somebody, who are these guys? If you're Tom Stillman and you're in charge of everything from the top, because we haven't heard from him yet, I don't think anybody necessarily knows what he's thinking. What is your next move here?
I don't know that. I guess I can only go to what I know about Tom. And Tom is a very competitive guy. He is a very he's intense when it comes to this. Yes, he's an absolute fan of the sport, you know, and the city and what this all means. But at the same time, he also knows that he's running a business and he has investors as part of his ownership group. So I think Tom is patient but pointed and direct. I think Army feels without a doubt that he has Tom's full support, as he should. I mean, Tom has made sure that this team is a salary cap team from the day he took over the ownership group. you know, I think business-wise, the team is as healthy as it's ever been, you know, on the business side of it. So Tom, I think, has a very calculated approach, and I don't think you're going to just nilly-willy hear from Tom when things go rough. I think it's up to Doug Armstrong and the team to put the message out that needs to be heard.
You know, this traditionally isn't a time of year for trades. My old buddy DeMarco Farr used to say, sometimes you got to shoot a hostage. And, you know.
That is well put.
Yeah, and while the timing is not good and it may preclude any moves, you know, and you really don't want, I hate negative motivation, but sometimes you have to. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering if Doug has that on the table for himself.
I think without a doubt. No, I don't know who the hostage is, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But I think without a doubt, look, you're going to get to 25 games here. And, you know, whether it was Andy Murray or whether it was Ken Hitchcock or any of the veteran coaches I've talked to, they've always said you can pretty much figure out your team within that first 25 games, what the personality is, and kind of go from there. So I'm walking down the street, guys. That's just the cops chasing after Joey Vitale.
Yeah, that's Joey's ride.
Yeah, we're walking to the rink, so we're walking a little faster now. But here's what you can't do. Look, you built a team in the summertime. You figure, okay, you look at this thing, and you've got four lines of depth. You've got a good defensive core. Mm-hmm. You know, your goaltending should be solid, right? And it just hasn't panned out. Well, okay, if it hasn't panned out, then you've got to make some changes. And sometimes the change is a spark. Maybe it is a trade of a core player. You know, maybe it is just bringing in something different. But keep in mind, guys, that where the Blues are, right up against the cap, right? If they make a trade, it's got to be dollars in for dollars out.
Yeah.
You know, or balance the other way because they're up against the cap. Now, the good news, I mean, some good news defensively is Robert Bortuzzo on this trip, you know, has said he's close. I don't know if he'll be in tomorrow here in Denver or in Arizona, but the Blues did put Nikita Soshnikov on waivers today. And in with that being the case, that frees up a roster spot for them to bring him off of IR. So. Mm-hmm. You know, those are scenarios that they're dealing with. But keep in mind, it's just not as easy as finding that hostage rammer and making the move because of the salary cap.
Right.
Which makes a lot of sense. I'm looking back through all the Blues history stuff here, and I think Blues fans, myself included, even though I'm certainly on the tail end of this, I was born in 1990, but starting in 1980, you made the playoffs 25 straight years. And then you went and made the playoffs for six or seven straight years prior to last year. This fan base is conditioned to being in the playoffs. So after last year and the start of this year, how quickly do you think you have to maybe shoot this hostage in order to keep the fan base from losing it?
Well, you know, Doug Armstrong proved last year with the trade of Paul Stastny where you were still in the playoff hunt, but he just felt that, look, even if we make the playoffs, we're not good enough to go deep. And getting that first round pick was a huge move for this hockey team, you know, and so that was important. I think Doug takes a very realistic approach to this hockey club. So I think this, he's trying to figure out what he's got here now. He's getting some different, you know, words from Craig Berube, who's now the man behind the bench. You got Larry Robinson that's gone down there to get a Hall of Famer's perspective from that standpoint. And I think he's working the phones now, to be honest with you. I mean, I think he's working the phones all the time, win, lose, or draw. But if he feels there's a move that will help the team, I don't think Doug hesitates to pull the trigger. He's proven to be that kind of general manager.
Yeah, I hope you are right, because I am just John Hadley said it well yesterday. He doesn't say very many things well, but he said it well. I refuse to give up on a team that still has 60 games left to play. So I think that's where most of us stand. Curbs, thanks so much for your time and your insight and everything, as always.
DJ, great job. Rammer, always good to talk to you. Welcome back, buddy.
You're the best. See you, pal.
All right, talk to you guys later.
All right, man. Take care. That is Blues play-by-play man for KMOX radio broadcast team, Chris Kerber. A lot of good insight, and always, for as much as, I mean, he sort of alluded to it, and I would say joked about it, where he says, people are ripping me for not just hanging guys out to dry and telling mom a joke. He's very thoughtful and very reasonable.
And tells you the truth without calling names.
Right.
You know, like saying, Hadley sucks.
Right, which I'll tell you that.
You will, but he's not.
That's true.
Right.
That's true. He will lose.
There's a difference between he'll leave it out there for you to get the inference.
That's right. 855-282-8255. David Solomon, any text from the fans?
Yes, we have plenty of action on the text line. Splashback Deuce asking, what does Towelman think about the Blues right now?
Oh, I bet Towelman's fairly disappointed.
He's not losing many towels.
No.
Lately.
And South City Stoner has one specifically for you. Hey, TJ, what player on the Blues who you believe is playing below their level is the most capable of turning their play around and leading this team?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I think those are two separate questions. As far as leading the team, the guy who should be turning his play around to me is Colton Parayko. He's getting a lot of ice time, but he's not doing squat. He's the guy at the top of most people's list that you're like, you signed a big deal here for what it's 4 or 5 years, $5.5 million. And yeah, he can skate. Okay. But how you
and he can shoot, but
he's buried on the power play because Petrangelo and Dunn are out there. He's the guy that I think could turn it around. And actually, if there was one single guy in this team that could change everything around, I think it's Colton Parayko. Petrangelo, as you pointed out last night, is starting to come around. He played a good game last night. Pareko's he's taken up a lot of ice time, which is nice, but he's not doing that much. And the single place on this team, because as we talked about coming in the show, Jake Allen is kind of the one thing keeping you from losing every game 8-0 right now. I mean, he's actually playing fairly well, aside from about 3 minutes last night. I think Pareko's the guy that can turn around, but he's no leader. The guy that has to lead, one of which I think is hurt right now, I think that's Jaden Schwartz. Jaden Schwartz, to me, is a guy that when he's playing well, even if it's not a leadership inside the locker room, I don't go inside the locker room. I'm not sure who the leader is in there. I tend to think it's Braden Schenn. But I don't know, and he's playing fairly well. But when Schwartz is playing, everybody plays, and we've seen that over the last few years.
Sets a tone.
Yeah.
And I also think, having been in that room, one name to keep in mind as a potential leader, Ryan O'Reilly, because I think by nature, and you see it at least with some of the forwards, his work ethic rubs off because he's always the last one on the ice. And when he's on the ice, you might have, you know, a Zach Sanford or a David Perron or whoever he might be with. Maybe it's Vladimir Tarasenko at times. You'll have other guys out with him. So I think that rubs off. And when you have someone with that attitude, Shen's been a great leader too. Mm-hmm. But I could see Ryan O'Reilly really emerging as he gets more comfortable and settles right in.
I don't know his personality, but the way he works would give him the right to say something.
That's absolutely right. I'll tell you this. Watching the game last night at the end, and they alluded to it on the broadcast, and it was interesting because it wasn't the local broadcast. That wasn't John Kelly. It wasn't Darren Payne.
It was Doc Emrick.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they said, what a great place to be where you can go over there and draw up a play and throw Ryan O'Reilly out in the circle and say, okay, so after we win the draw, here's what we're going to do. And he went out there and won three straight.
Yeah.
And he won them clean. And that sort of thing, especially doing it under pressure, that is a big deal. So not only a workhorse, but a guy who can roll it out there and was on a crap team over in Buffalo.
Yeah.
I mean, to the point where he was quoted as saying he's not that interested.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And to come over here and show that yesterday, it was in a losing effort and whatever, but even though that was about 45 seconds of hockey, winning three straight draws like that clean to give your team a chance when you had the goalie pulled, that's a big deal.
I think it is too. And the other guy you mentioned, Petrangelo's playing better. If there was a one-name answer to that two-part question, it might have been him, but he is playing better, it appears.
Right. And I just don't think he's a strong leader. That's my opinion from the outside. I don't know what it's like in the locker room.
And that's why maybe, and the thing is, you don't want to embarrass a player by taking a letter away, a C or an A. But, you know, you don't just give the C to your best player necessarily, or who you think it is, but who is the guy that can really lead the team? I've always thought there was too much emphasis put on that in hockey. Brett Hull used to say it's not a big deal, but, you know, it's just the guy who gets to talk to the refs. But In the culture of hockey, there is more to it than that.
No, absolutely.
And so maybe more care should be taken in handing those letters out.
In all fairness, though, when they named Petrangelo captain, it was right after David Backes departed, the 2016-2017. What other strong veteran, if you were even going to give a C out at all, who else would you have given it to at that time?
Right.
And then on the flip side, as much as we're talking about Petrangelo maybe not being a dynamic leader or necessarily comfortable being the front man, the guy who drops the gloves for the team, and the guy who goes out, kisses babies, and then comes out to the media. Not that Alex ever refuses to talk to the media or anything, but the guy who's always comfortable coming out, win or lose, and standing up, maybe not with a smile, but very cordially giving thorough, long, detailed answers to every question. Alex has done nothing, I would say, bad, but he's not necessarily the guy who screams, look at me, I'm a captain, like a Jonathan Toews type or David Backus when he was here.
I can name one thing that he did that was bad that's going to stick in Blues fans' minds probably when they think back about Alex Pietrangelo in 20 years, and that's getting his face sit on by Jamie Benn and against Dallas last year and doing nothing about it and just got his face pushed into the ice over and over and over again, and they did nothing. And then they lost the game, and Cam, I think, just trying to defend guy says, look, you can't get a penalty. Well, yeah, you can. And you do right there because you don't let people push you around like that, and that sets the tone. And I think that's ingrained in a lot of people's heads. To me, that is the type of thing. We were talking about it yesterday. I was talking to a guy at the gym. David Perron, as much as he's not really your leader, he does get fired up, and he would get a penalty. And that's where I want you to get a penalty. Don't get a lot of stupid penalties. Don't when there's 2 minutes left in the game, you know, you got to pay close attention. You don't let anybody treat you like that. Ever.
Agreed.
Because you're the top dog, and you taking it says anybody else on your team can take it, too.
Yeah, that's right.
We've got the Bo Evil of Bevo Mills saying, Parayko is just a human orange construction barrel. Skaters just go right around him. With his size, he should be putting opponents through the boards, eh?
Oh, no question about it.
He's not interested in hitting anybody. But what he can do better than anybody on this roster is skate the puck out of his own zone. And he's probably the only guy on your team that can do that really well. Which is why if you lost him, you're in even worse shape. But at the same time, you need something. He's got to turn it around. If he's, like we're talking about now, he's taken up about as much ice time on a given night as Pietrangelo. And that, I mean, Petro's on the ice 24, 25 minutes a night.
Yeah, I'm frustrated, but I'm still, I find myself being intoxicated by the skill set.
Yeah.
The size and the skill set. So I think there's more there. Can it be mined? You know, same thing with the former whipping boy, Patrick Berglund.
Mm.
Speed, size, shot, had all the tools, but except in rare spurts, you never saw it all put together. And those are the kinds of guys that fans will turn on. And so I think there's still more there. He's still a kid.
I mentioned this earlier, but Parayko, so his rookie year, I don't know exactly, but he had a bunch of points. And everybody thought, here we go.
Yeah.
You're on. Well, he's because of Vince Dunn, he's getting very few offensive opportunities. I mean, almost none. Parayko's just not out there. He started to at the beginning of the year. Everything has changed the way it's gone a little bit. So he's not getting these bombs from the point like he was a lot of last year. And Dunn came around towards last year as well, too. But I think that's a big deal as far as if you're expecting a lot of points, those type of guys with that type of shot are going to get him on the power play. And if you're not out there, well, he's just a dude. And so that's where you run into trouble. The other thing that we don't talk about, and I'm not sure how relevant it really is in all honesty, but there was an announcement, going back a year now, of Pietrangelo having triplets. Don't tell me that doesn't wear on you at home when you got three babies the same age not sleeping. we talked about this with Jake Allen. Well, he did just have a kid. Well, Petro just had three kids.
Yeah.
The same time. I'm just saying that when you got a lot going on at home, and look, I'm well aware that he's making enough money that he can hire help and all that. Don't tell me though that's not wearing on you to some degree.
So let's keep an eye and see if there is a difference in his splits home and road.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually think there's merit to that.
We'll check it out. David will get on that.
David, it's all about you, buddy. Well, boys, we are going to talk to correct me if I'm wrong on this, David. We are at 909 Public House a week from today.
I believe that is correct.
That'll be fun. Raymer, do you know your schedule for next week yet?
I think I'll be at the 909 Public House on Thursday.
Yeah, baby. I like that. Very good. Very good. And you are, we want to hit the Slew Billikens next segment. We're going to get into that. And there's a game Saturday. And then when is the next game after that?
Not until the next game.
Okay. So we'll look at the schedule, and we'll have all that for you.
You got the Oregon State game coming up December 9th, too. And I believe they're in Carbondale.
In between. Yeah.
Okay. Well, good. We'll have the exact dates for you coming up there. So that, if you guys have not been paying attention, does affect...
Like I haven't.
Does affect Rammer's availability on the show if he's going to be doing some stuff with them. So we will get on top of that. But 909 Public House, 1 week from today out in Wentzville, Missouri. That place is fantastic. Gosh. we've been there, I think, five times now. And Rock gets the catfish. He's a catfish guy. I tried it last time, and oh my gosh, is it good.
I had it last time.
They have gumbo. We're gumbo guys. All right, remember,
well,
you and me.
I'll check it out.
That's a fun hockey segment. If you guys missed it, go back on the podcast. Chris Kerber was very, very good and very thoughtful as usual. So make sure you come hang out with us at 99 Public House week from today. Write that on your calendar. Do it now. Tell Alexa. Alexa, remind me to go to 909 Public House Thursday, week from today, whatever the date that is. And she will listen and she will remind you. I just a little bit obsessed with this Alexa thing, Raymer. So
we can tell.
Maybe I'll get you one for Christmas. Pretty good. We got to go to break. Some SLU basketball talk coming up, and then Raphael from mybookie.ag at 205. Stick around, everybody. It's the Hardline.